Kevin, is there any part of your workday that's unplanned or unscripted?
Oh, I would say just enough to keep things interesting.
Okay. Imagine having to show up to record the 315 and having to improvise on the spot. In fact, you have a script in front of you right now, don't you?
Yes, I do.
What does it say?
It says, "We welcome members of the Syracuse Improv Collective to today's show. They're going to speak with us about improvisational theater and perhaps teach us some techniques to improve our improvisational skills."
That's all coming up on the 315.
As a public radio listener, we know you have a lot of different interests. And with our slate of podcasts, we try and provide on-demand audio for everyone.
This is Marv Duggar with Science on the Radio.
From contentious public divorces to drunk driving arrests to private rants caught on tape, Hollywood figures are no stranger to the heat of the spotlight.
The NBA Draft Combine starts today, and every Syracuse fan is watching this guy.
Whether it's science, sports, or pop culture, we think you'll find something you can enjoy. Check out our selection of on-demand audio over at WAER.org or in Apple Podcasts by searching for WAER.
Oh, hello. I didn't see you there. Do you want to become more of a self-made man?
Or woman?
A self-made person? Then you should try improv comedy. With improv, you can learn any real-life skills just like that. Here, let me show you. Are you allergic to cats?
I'm good, man. I'm good.
Cool. All right, so in here, I have a radon elimination system. And to be honest, I didn't even know I had this thing until I was in an improv scene and somebody mentioned radon. I went home and checked it out. Check this out. The bars are uneven. That means no poisonous radon is entering my house. Improv comedy saved my family from getting cancer.
No, it didn't.
Welcome to the 315. I'm Kevin Kloss.
And I'm Joe Lee. And we welcome to the show Phil Gross, Lauren Esposito, and Aaron Boutron, all members of the Syracuse Improv Collective. Welcome all.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So it's great to have you guys here. Just to kind of get things started, Phil, why don't you tell us a little bit about SIC?
Sure. Well, we're the Syracuse Improv Collective. We've been around since 2011, and we do shows and classes right here in the heart of Syracuse. We love comedy. We love our friends, and we love making fun of each other. I mean, having a good time together. So it's good.
And what is, for those that may only have loosely heard the term, what is improv comedy? I mean, it's sort of self-explanatory, but go into a little more about it.
Sure. Well, actually, I'd love to let Lauren take that question. Go ahead.
Sure. I'd be happy to. Improv is a kind of performance where actors get up on stage and they create an entirely improvised set, which could last as long as 10 minutes. It could last as long as 30 minutes. And these are things that usually are inspired by a suggestion from the audience. So we'll come out and we'll ask somebody for one word that you want to see a show about. And someone might yell out volcano, or they might yell out car. And then we will, from that inspiration, we will improvise scenes off of that.
Now, do you all have a file cabinet of go-to characters that that you tap into?
I wouldn't say it's a file cabinet of characters. You do tend to slip into like certain voices over and over again, or something like that. Like Phil here has a stock woman that he does every once in a while.
Are you trying to get me to break out my stock woman right now?
I would never willingly want to hear that voice come out of you.
maybe the stock woman will make an appearance before the show is over. How did you guys get started?
Sure. So the group started in 2011 with a few teams that just wanted to perform more together. And they are still with us, and they have a whole slew of very experienced performers who have come from major city theaters from around the U.S. And since then, you know, they started doing classes, and, you know, Aaron and I are the product of some of those classes. We've been really grateful to have even more experienced people like Lauren come and join us from New York and other cities. So it's a surprisingly thriving comedy community right here in Syracuse.
So in terms of entertainment, you know, there's a lot of different ways you guys could express that. But what specifically maybe draws each of you to the art of improv?
Yeah, I I find that it's a combination of a bunch of things. Two that come to mind immediately is creativity and connection. I find stand-up comedy terrifying. I could never do that. I have the utmost respect for people who can. And I find that that desire to create something and to be funny finds its way into improv in an ensemble. So I love that I can get up on stage with fellow improvisers. I have no idea what's going to happen. I don't know how the scene is going to go, but based off of that trust, and we have a saying in the SIC that's we just kind of say to each other, I got your back, right before a scene starts. So I know that whatever I do on stage, it's going to be added to and built upon by the people around me. So that connection is something that kind of helps me deal with some of that
now,
nervousness.
Do you think you're a part of the family. She teaches here at the Syracuse University writing program. And as a writer, would you say that there are different skills that you need that would enhance your ability to be an improv actor that are quite different from the skills that you need to be a stand-up?
I would say that there's probably an overlap and a combination of skills, and I would definitely throw it out there that as a writer, whether you're writing sketch, whether you're writing stand-up, I think just from listening to other improvisers and other actors, a lot of those ideas come from improv. You might improvise a scene and that becomes a kernel of an idea for a sketch, or might take something from stand-up and then see it, something that might develop in an improv scene. I think as a writer, you have to pay attention to your audience and you have to pay attention to when you're connecting and when an idea lands or doesn't land. And I think that works in both writing and improv, just I think on different levels in terms of whether it's scripted or unscripted.
Yeah, not to get too far into the weeds, but I think there is a skill set of writing a setup and a punchline, especially for stand-up, that you don't get necessarily from improv. Yeah. But like Lauren was describing, that kind of mindset of spontaneity and the way of looking at the world is very important for improv. Aaron and I have been writing some sketch together recently, and it's different, but we sometimes will improvise a scene together and then create a sketch out of the scene.
It's sometimes actually a hindrance to our sketch work that we're improvisers, because we'll be sitting in the car and we'll start riffing on an idea and just cracking each other up, and then sit down to write it and it's just gone. It was in that moment that it was just hilarious, and it was number one in the charts of our hearts.
What I hear a lot in referencing successful stand-up comedians is timing. Is timing important in improv comedy?
Not even just like the timing of a joke. Like an actual joke might never come, but like the timing of knowing when to join a scene or when to leave. That's an even bigger thing. It's like, because you could just be standing there and your time in the scene's over and you don't realize it, you know.
Yeah,
there's a theatricality to it, and a lot of it, in our basic level one classes, we start off with teaching storytelling elements, and so you start to learn, like, okay, what belongs in a story, like what parts are natural to it, and how can you develop that story very, very quickly on the spot.
Yeah, and I think something else we emphasize too in our courses is that just not even giving yourself enough time to think, but going with a choice, like making a choice to start a scene. I think a lot of times people say, oh, I want to wait till I have a great idea. And that great idea comes from just making that choice and stepping out on that scene, maybe a character or something that you develop with somebody else, but just not even holding back, just allowing yourself, yep, I'm just going to jump out there and I'm going to try this thing. And someone else has my back and we're going to make it work.
So you just referenced, Phil, that beginner's course, if you will. Try to give us a crash course of foundational elements for someone who's diving into improv for the first time. What are some of those bedrock things that you teach someone?
Sure. I would actually start recently. There's a book, Improv Nation, came out that's pretty cool. And he went back in the history of improv. And one of the things they talk about is the kitchen rules, right? So these are kind of foundational three rules that, most improv schools would agree to. And the first one you'd say is don't deny. Right. So if something's been established in a scene, then you're going to agree that it's there and you believe in it. You might have heard that as yes and is pretty similar. And the second one is escaping me right now. The third one is to stay in character. Right. So similar to that agreement, you stay in character. Lauren, can you remember the second one?
The second one it's Sam Watson's book. Improv Nation, which is great. I can't think of exactly his, but I think there's something else that comes to mind.
Don't ask questions. Or?
That's up there, too.
That's up there, too. Definitely, yes, and definitely staying in character and not writing the script in your head. A lot of improvisers will say, we want to discover a scene. If you come out there with an idea, you're just going to offer one part of it. And brick by brick, we're going to build that scene, which is another common phrase. So I might step out there and be like, Phil, we're on the moon. And Phil might respond with, yeah, we have the ship coming towards us. And together with each line of dialogue, we'll build the scene. Instead of me coming at me like, yeah, we're on the moon. And yeah, the ship is coming and this asteroid is going to hit us. I've now kind of tried to script the scene from the start instead of letting Phil help me build it. So
what's wrong with asking questions? Is that like passing the buck?
But if you ask a question that's like if I come out with you and start a scene and I point to something on the ground and go, what is that?
That's cheating. That's putting all the work on me.
Yeah, puts
exactly. Okay. So you got to carry your own load.
Yeah.
How do you know when it's over? How do you know when a scene is over?
Oh.
If you're sort of improvising, how does it end?
If you're lucky, it ends on a big joke.
Okay.
Or you're just trying to bring it to some natural conclusion that makes sense. Yeah, you just hope it doesn't peter out into nothing to where you're just like, okay, that's our scene. Let's move on to something funny.
And Lauren, I think you mentioned earlier about someone mentioned something about knowing when, reading your audience and not knowing when something works. Phil, can you think of a time where you just read the audience and it was like, this is just not happening?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that happens to me, I don't know, more than I'd like to admit. But it's funny because as you get into improv more and more, you start to forget like specific sets that you've done. It's not like scenes that you've done don't. We like to say like we love to fail in the sick. And I think it's educational. Like we love to learn from our mistakes and that sort of thing. So the most dead air I can remember though is from back at the beginning. Our team was just up. We were in a festival show that we didn't really belong in. And I think one of my scene partners denied something that was going on. And we were all very confused about being princesses or shoes. I don't know. It's not very entertaining to talk about it after the fact either, you know?
I can think of one. I remember we asked for a location. And somebody called out spider web,
and oh yeah,
everybody else in the group went yeah okay, and I went, that's not a location. So the scene goes on, and it we made it work to a degree, but there were just parts of it that just were going nowhere.
Yeah, I think I was a bird, and yeah. Aaron was a spider, and
mm-hmm, there
yeah.
was a cat, I think too.
Yeah,
yeah. yeah. So
this is highly audience interacted.
Yes, okay. Absolutely.
So how does a show unfold? So from the time you come on stage, how does it work?
Sure. Well, we have our host usually kicking things off, kind of describing to the audience what improv is. And then we have sort of teams that will perform that night. Usually we have four teams that have lined up that have practiced and that will come and do a show. Again, they don't know what and where they'll get from the audience. That'll inspire it. But someone from their team will step out and ask for a suggestion from the audience. And it usually is a word. And the audience will shout out. You'll hear a bunch of different words. And that person will pick whatever they've heard. And then that team will then go ahead and improvise a series of scenes for about 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes 20 minutes, usually. And then once they've done their 20-minute set, three other teams will also perform that night, each doing something they've never done before that the audience will never see again, which I think is so great for improv because it's like this insider experience that you have by going to that show because you'll never see that show exactly like it again. And then that's kind of our overall structure for the night.
So how often and where are you guys performing these shows?
We perform at least once a month. In 2019, we'll be performing twice a month, but our main shows are going to be held at Jazz Central. If you're familiar there, it's over on Washington Street. Great little venue, perfect size for us, intimate. You get really, tight with the audience. Everyone can hear each other laugh. And we have a show coming up this Friday on Black Friday, and that'll be at 8 o'clock. It's just $10 to come on in and have a good time. But we also do some more experimental type shows. We'll be over at Nancy Cantor Warehouse pretty often. And so those shows are free to come on into. And we're really grateful to the college for hosting us there.
There's another group in town, Salt City Improv. Do you guys interact? How do you fit in this one town? Two groups like that.
Yeah, it's funny. The town is a little small for that, right? But yeah, we cross paths a lot. Our group especially, I think, is very welcoming, and we've got performers that are hanging out in both theaters and taking classes at both theaters. So yeah, we like to try to be pretty welcoming about that.
Mm-hmm. And who's attending? Do you know your audience well?
We've got a range, yeah. I mean, we've got anywhere from college students to young professionals to even people who are, further along in their career and have already had families and now are looking for something else to do too, or developing maybe something they had in hobby and coming back to it. So we see a wide range, and we see people who come in with different reasons. People who want to come in because they really want to learn improv, people who've never heard of it before and see it as an opportunity to get better at public speaking, communicating at their job, going to that meeting on Mondays and not feeling really nervous when they have to report back to their team. So it's kind of great that we have learned so much about our audience over the years, and we try as best we can, because we think improv is such an awesome tool to do a lot of that, to share that with other people too and bring them into our community.
How much of improv or performance would you say on a personal level, like, you take home with you when you're spending so much time sort of thinking about setting up scenes and really having the performance element? Are you able to just turn that off?
No, it's a mindset. Yeah. It's definitely, it's almost like an attitude that you carry with you. I'm married. I got a 4-year-old daughter. My wife is a music teacher. She's just started taking improv classes and performing. And for us, it's like, playtime around the house, or like, one of the big skills that we like to talk about in improv is listening. And for us, listening is, of course, processing what people are saying, but also paying attention to their body language and, anything that they might do. And so it's kind of looking, like I said earlier, is looking at the world and, noticing the little odd things that happen and of course, laughing at them. I think that's important, because sometimes you can look at odd things and be bitter about them. But I think it's a lot more fun to do it the other way.
Is this a well-received in our community form of entertainment? I know for a while there was, I don't know who was it, ABC or someone had a show on television.
Yeah.
And that ran for quite a few seasons of improv comedy. It seems like that was sort of the height of it. So where are we with improv comedy these days?
It's kind of everywhere. Like it's popular right now as I think it's ever been. I don't think it's as popular here in Syracuse as we would like it to be. The show you're referencing was Whose Line Is It Anyway? I believe.
Yes.
What we do is really nothing like that.
Okay.
I mean, that show was improvised, but what they were doing is called short form improv, which is like there's some kind of game that they're playing.
Mm-hmm.
They have a structure they're already adhering to in that, where ours is a little bit more freeform. And
well, that's thank you for that, because I think it's important for if you're like me and that's your only reference, then that's kind of what I'm thinking this is all about. So you're saying this is entirely different. So
yeah, and like Aaron was saying, this is long form improv is what we do, and it's hugely popular in the major cities around the world now. But especially in New York and L.A. and Chicago, where it's come up in the States. And I think it's at a really natural point right now where it's starting to grow out in smaller areas like Syracuse and Rochester. And, we've got friends in Ithaca and all over who are, clambering to do this art form. And I think a lot of it comes down to its accessibility. It's, super cheap. All you need to perform is a few chairs and a roof over your head. And obviously some training. But other than that, anyone should be able to try it, and anyone should be able to enjoy it.
Now, in terms of the audience, I can imagine if you've been doing this for a while, you might hear a lot of the same words. Is that a challenge?
I don't think so. I mean, although I'm trying to think of other choice phrases or words that come up when people in the audience trying to be funny, and we welcome that too, and we roll with it. But yeah.
So you don't get a situation where it's like, oh, here we go again. I gotta pull out the stock lady.
Yeah.
Here's the stock lady scene. So you get a variety of responses. That's good.
The only problem is food. For some reason, people's minds go to food when you ask for a word.
They're hungry.
So chicken wing.
Pineapple.
Well, we have a little challenge for you if you are up for the game, up for the match. We'll do it. We'll come back. I don't know. Do you want us to tell you what it is before the break, or do you want us to go to break, come back, and just hit you with it?
Just hit us with it.
Yeah, let's do it.
We're going to go to break, and when we come back, we're going to offer a little challenge. Now, our challenge was devised by me before speaking to you guys. You guys operate off of words. We've sort of painted a scene, so
That works.
Hopefully it works, but stick around. We'll be right back.
In the latest episode of Pop Life, WAER's Joe Lee is joined by Bob Thompson as they recall the legacy of Stan Lee.
Spider-Man, the X-Men, Iron Man, the Incredible Hulk, Black Panther, so many.
That universe, I think, has got to be the most, in sheer volume, biggest universe of storytelling, I think, ever.
Hear the full conversation at WAER.org or in Apple Podcasts and Stitcher.
So, welcome back to the 315, Kevin. We have a little scene we want to sort of compose, express, whatever word you want to use, to see if we can get these guys to create a little scene for us.
So, in this highly original scene, the three of you, we will just say you are staff at a public radio station,
and one of you wants to program nonstop Christmas music,
while one of you would like to program just insult talk shows.
And then the other just wants to shut the station down, go to Sheboygan, Wisconsin, and watch their 93-year-old grandmother make cheese. Can you do anything with that?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Let's do this.
Let's go.
Jingle bells, jingle bells.
Susie, I wanted to talk to you for a second. Do you have a minute? Can we pull you over here?
Sure, Bob. I just want to take my bells off for you.
Okay. Susie, listen, I've got this thing going.
Mm-hmm.
It's just... with the way America is right now, mm-hmm. and our listenership and everything we've been researching on the demographics, mm-hmm. I think it's high time that this station was just putting out curse words once a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, more frequent than that. I'm thinking like if you can think of a curse word right now, don't say it. Just think of it. All right?
Hey, guys.
Oh, hey, Joe.
Oh, hey, Joe. Well,
way to start the state of the station meeting without me.
But, Joe, you show up late, and you're not wearing your Christmas sweater, so let's up with
well,
that.
Well, your sweater is ugly.
Thank you.
Susie.
Take that as a compliment. Thanks.
I didn't mean it as one, but okay.
I know. Thank you. You're so sweet.
It is really ugly, yeah. Susie.
The uglier, the better.
Yeah, you guys know nobody's listening, right?
Do you mean to the radio station or to this meeting?
We have an Amazon Echo, so of course someone's listening to the meeting, but no one is listening to the station right now.
In general,
all in here.
In general, like, yeah, no one's listening.
That's pretty bad.
It is bad. Like, you know,
I had a solution for that.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, if we just had like a different curse word every 2 seconds or so.
Oh, every 2 seconds, like.
Yeah.
So what about our religious programming?
Well, we talked about that. We said anything that has to do with the holidays, right? Anything with Christmas, Hanukkah, just as long as it plays 24/7, we have no problem with that.
Oh, sure. So you're onto Hanukkah now?
Yeah, of course I am.
I don't believe you.
Look, ever since I took your parking spot, you really have to bring this up now at a meeting?
Well, yeah.
Yeah? You're just not in the spirit?
I mean, I left my photograph of Lenny Bruce in that parking spot so no one else would take it.
Okay, guys, I think the only real solution is to close up shop. I have a feeble grandmother in Wisconsin I need to get to. She hasn't had cheese in weeks. She needs someone to make the cheese for her. She can't figure out how to turn on the Packers game. It's a disaster down there.
I'm sympathetic, Joe.
Listen, Joe, I think you should leave the station to me, Joe. I can handle it, obviously. I've been employee of the month for at least 9 months running.
Oh, well, you initiated that program, so that's not a surprise.
Joe, just because I initiate it and I give out the awards every week doesn't mean that it's not a valid program. It motivates people in this office.
Yeah, you give out employee of the month every week?
I do. It's special, Joe.
All right. Well, you're positing nonstop Christmas music, mm-hmm. You're talking like December through January or?
Till July, Christmas in July. Oh, holidays run. Have it in your heart, Joe. The holidays never go away.
What time are you going to make for Hanukkah? Is it just going to be 8 weeks?
Okay. No. Hanukkah's in there too.
Yeah.
Dreidel. Yeah. It's all part of it. Okay. Just no swear words. All right. I won't have my ears being ringing.
I just think we want to get some listeners. That's all I'm saying. I'm trying to be practical here.
We have 5 loyal listeners. Well, I think that's enough.
Well, if no one's listening to begin with, how are they going to know that you started swearing?
It'll just be like a tree falling in the woods.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Where you're going, Joe, there are a lot of trees. So do you really want to be out there alone, Joe?
I do. I feel at peace with, you know, with the Gouda and the American and the Munster.
Yeah. And scene.
Okay. I like that I'm being made fun of with the cheese and everything. It's funny this guy's name is Joe. That was hilarious. It was
I didn't mean to make that was just a name that popped up. I'm sorry. Actual Joe. I'm sorry.
That was Kevin was turning red over here.
I made use of the cough button.
I forgot about the cough button. I could have used that while I was laughing. That was fantastic. It was very funny. If that is any indication of what folks will get when they attend your performance, I think they're going to have a fantastic time.
Well, thanks.
Thank you.
We want to thank Phil, Lauren, and Aaron for spending some time with us today and giving us all something to laugh about. To learn more about the Syracuse Improv Collective, visit syracuseimprovcollective.com.
And while you're there, take a look at the classes that they offer. Who knows? It might awaken the improv performer in you. Listen to more 315 episodes. You can visit WAER.org and like the Facebook page, The 315 CNY. Thanks for listening.